My Eagle enthusiasts, it's Fairway Rollin' presented by FanDuel. Major season is here, and you can get in on all the long drives, big putts, and major moments with FanDuel. Check out live PGA Tour bets like longest drive, round leaders, matchups, birdie or better, and more. Plus, track every shot in the app and watch select par three holes while you place your bets. Download the app today and bet with FanDuel, the official betting operator of the PGA Tour. Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. You must be 21 years old or older and present in select states. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, from superchargers and brakes to exhaust kits and beyond, eBay Motors levels your baby up to its peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
On today's Shack House, we are going to discuss Webb Simpson's Players' Championship win and Tiger Woods' interesting performance there. Plus, we are going to break down, well, actually, we're just going to kick around this new sports betting news brought to you by the Supreme Court of the United States today. And I am at Trinity Forest, where the AT&T Byron Nelson is being played this week, and this is going to be some major must-see golf. But, of course, you know that the Shack House is brought to you by our friends at Callaway Golf, who sponsor the great Xander Schauffele, who switched lofts on his Rogue Sub-Zero driver last week, House. I don't know if you know this. He went from to a 10.5 from the 9, and guess what he did? He made a whole lot of money, finished second.
He did.
And it's a good reminder. Make sure you get fit. Make sure you get on the launch monitor. Even the best players in the world have to make these adjustments. He's got the Sub-Zero driver with a jailbreak, of course, and the new hourglass-shaped titanium bars that are 25% lighter, and he could buy a whole bunch of them after that incredible second place at the Players on a zany Sunday.
You know what else he could buy some more of, Shaq?
Mm.
Nice dress shirts.
Yeah.
Today's show.
A lot of the golf pros could.
Yeah. Also brought to you by our good friends at Proper Cloth, the leader in men's custom shirts. Are you having trouble finding shirts that fit? Phil Mickelson apparently is. At ProperCloth.com, ordering custom shirts has never been easier. Create your custom shirt size by answering 10 easy questions, and it doesn't take very long. Shirts start at $80 and are delivered in just 2 weeks. Perfect fit is guaranteed. If a shirt doesn't fit, they will remake it for free. The whole process is risk-free. For premium quality, perfect-fitting shirts, visit propercloth.com/shackhouse and use gift code SHACKHOUSE to get $20 off your first custom shirt today. That's a great deal. $60 for a custom-fit dress shirt. That's outstanding. All right,
let's go to the Shack House. Let's go to the Shack House. We got a lot to do, House.
Let's get in the Shack House.
Greetings from Dallas, Texas, or somewhere in the vicinity. I believe this is, technically Dallas, Texas. House, how you doing today?
Shaq, I'm doing great. It's the greatest day in the history of American sports. Take a guess why.
Webb Simpson won the Players' Championship.
Yes, that's it. Exactly. Webb Simpson won the Players' Championship.
So how did you get the news? Well, we're going to get into the Supreme Court thing, but I just want to know, since you've brought it up, and I know that's what you're really happy about, how did you get the news? Was it an alert
You have to remember, I'm a lawyer by training, my old lawyer days. So I have a network of lawyers that I'm pals with from back in the day that are all wired up with their instant alerts from the SCOTUS. Anytime the Supreme Court does, you know, wiggles a nose hair, you get an alert. So I was inundated with news as it happened. And obviously, it was an exciting moment in my office at that moment.
All right, well, we'll get to that. I'm pretty sure you would not have bet on Webb Simpson never finishing in the top 15 at the Players' Championship and really having a few nice finishes, a few signs. That final round at the Masters was a nice sign, but nothing that made you say, oh, Webb Simpson's going to go out and shoot 18 under, would have been 20 under if he'd parred the last hole, and win the Players' Championship in dominating fashion. And that is, I think, the TPC Sawgrass and the Players in a nutshell. Once again, it did reward somebody playing incredibly great golf, but it always has this sort of odd feel to the way it concludes. And I think that's why the Ricky Fowler year always gets mentioned, because that was the one year where you just felt like it it felt more like a normal golf tournament, but the Players beat Dye, the whole thing. It's always got – and I'm not saying it's bad house. It's just different. And – it was, I would say, made a lot better by Tiger Woods' play on the weekend, too. And then just so many other guys. I mean, if you took Webb Simpson away, by the way, House, wow, would it have been an amazing leaderboard. And I don't mean that as a disrespectful statement about Webb Simpson. It just would have been an incredible dogfight, and we probably would have had a playoff.
Yeah, and we did capture a few of the things that we talked about last week. We did see, you know, we observed that this event always has the potential for a player to sort of grab it by the horns and wrestle it to the ground, this venue, yep, and just run away with it. And that's what Webb Simpson did. And we also, you know, wondered about the effects of the style of play on some players of interest. I was really intrigued. We'll get to Tiger, obviously, but I was really intrigued by Jordan Spieth this week. I really thought he put some demons to rest after the opening round, three over, battled his way back to make the cut, and then was really intriguing over the entire course of the weekend. We saw the full sort of range of Jordan. And obviously we're going to talk about him in connection with this Trinity Forest and the Byron Nelson as the – is he the defending champion?
No, he is essentially the de facto host pro. This is where he practices, and he's obviously an AT&T ambassador, and he is the man here. He is the this is where he does almost all of his practice. Cameron McCormick, his instructor, works here, so yes. So he is not the defending champion, but all eyes are on him this week.
Yeah.
And to your point, well, let's just talk about his play at the Players to wrap that up. After Sunday's round, where he hit that one out in the middle of the lake on 18 and made a quad, he came in, and of course, we were all standing around in the scrum area just dreading, like, okay, oh, yeah, he's going to go make he's going to go straight for the locker room. He was great. The press person for the tour said, five questions only. Well, he went 5 minutes on the first question. I mean, he was jazzed. It was odd. He said he really hit the ball and felt better over the ball and felt better over the putter on Sunday, believe it or not, than Saturday when he shot 65. So keep that in mind for this week when he comes to a golf course where he is the only one who truly, really knows this course well. But it was fascinating how not giddy he was, but he was in good, really good spirits for a guy who just made eight on the last hole and really just never looked quite right on Sunday.
It was, in one respect, this is the thing that I like very much about Jordan Spieth, and I think it makes him appealing to the masses. He had a very relatable final hole of the tournament in this way. He hit his tee shot into the water after having made birdie on the previous hole. So, you know what, that's the PBFU. You're familiar with that. And then he was perfectly poised to save bogey. From there on in, he hit a shot to the front of the green that rolled backwards a little bit, but he could have chipped up and one putted for bogey. And instead, he got indifferent. in a manner that so many of us, and by us I mean us, us digital handicappers at the end of a round, you know, who knows what's been going on during the round, but you get to 18, you make a mistake, you take you start losing a little bit of focus, and next he three putted from, you know, what was that, 6 feet or so? I mean, the reason he had a quadruple bogey is because he lost focus. And his attitude, I heard you, you know, you we talked beforehand and you you had indicated that he had, you know, wasn't really all that banged up about making the quad. It's like, he enjoyed himself. That's very relatable to me.
The day was so cool with Tiger making that run, and Jordan's a golf geek, so he's a fan too. And I think that's why he's special. He loves that moment. There are some people who would not enjoy the moment, or it would be uncomfortable for them. He loved the moment. And by the way, Mackenzie Hughes, who played with Tiger on Saturday, also embraced the moment really nicely. And he was kind of trying to work a few putts in with the body language. And he was somebody who had lunch with Tiger recently at Bay Hill. They were at the same table, but he couldn't muster up the courage to introduce himself. And so they sat there quietly, and then here they are playing together, and he shot 68. So those were cool things, but Jordan was just clearly in his element. It's just one of those things that it didn't happen. I don't think he really is a big fan of the TPC Sawgrass. It's just pretty obvious that it's one of those places where I'm not sure he just knows quite what to make of it. And maybe it's such that he overanalyzes sometimes a golf course, which is great when it's a course loaded with strategy. But I don't know if that one could be dangerous to overanalyze. I'll tell you what, I have to share something I thought that was the most fascinating thing about the way Webb Simpson analyzed his game. And it's something I want to try it on a golf course house. I think you'll find it interesting. Although I don't know, I've seen you play. I'm not sure if playing safe is your thing. But so I'll give you the short version, just because this was to me the coolest part of the tournament. Obviously, everybody talked about him putting so well, overcoming the anchoring ban, and finally finding something, and that is cool. And he made an interesting comment last night in the press conference. I had asked actually a question, and then Ben Everill followed up on that. Did he ever get emotional or angry? Because Adam Scott, I think, gets pretty angry about what's happened with the band. And Webb said it never got to that point. In fact, he said it was the first time he'd ever said it, but he's happy the ban happened, not because he's happy that old guys are yipping the putter and can't use it, but because it forced him to do some things to make himself a better golfer. I thought that was pretty impressive. But here was his deal, House. At Augusta, he got mad. He realized he was missing in the wrong spot all the time, or too often. And he realized he needs to stop short-sighting himself on golf courses that actually have design that where you just can't be in a certain spot. So his approach, his caddy explained, and really Paul Tesori explained it better than Webb even, but he said it really may change the course of his career. He picks a conservative target when there is a green. Let's say he's playing to the 16th green at Augusta, and that pin's left and there's a lake left. And he picks a target in the center of the green, a conservative one, and he plays aggressively to that target. And so the concept is that it instills in him not to play away from the trouble, but to not steer the ball, to still take an aggressive swipe at it. And that's what he does, as you see, as kind of an unusual move. So I just thought that was really cool, and it's something I think that, you know, we always hear how you can watch and learn from these guys. No, you really can't too often. They play something that we don't relate to very well most of the time. But I thought that was a cool thing to take away mentally for a lot of people, not just a Webb Simpson playing TPC Sawgrass, but for all of us. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. The interesting thing to me is there were many instances over the course of Saturday and Sunday. I watched a lot of his rounds where I felt like he was going at the pins. So it must be the case that conservative aggressive factors in the possibility of a miss, and the miss has the effect of, if you miss the conservative target, you're now at the pin. Like, he hit the ball to the left of the pin on 14 on Sunday. And it for a minute there, or a couple seconds, looked like it was going to be an incredible shot, and then there's no way for the ball to stop there, so it rolled down. But that was a miss. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, that's part of it. I mean, that is certainly part of it. And he mentioned that he missed some shots where he didn't want to. But I think the main thing, at least again, for somebody playing a golf course that has architectural features and spots you just know you can't get up and down from, or worse, you'd be in a hazard, that you really, I think most of us, when we play safe, we play to a safe line, and then we don't really sometimes take the best swing because we're not really, we're just kind of laying the club on the ball and pushing it out there. And so I think it's something to think about, that it helps you swing a little bit more aggressively and stay down through the ball and things like that. And it just kind of, it also is it's sort of a positive approach instead of a protective one. And I just found that to be something that was unusual, and it was really cool that they shared that, and it really clicked on Sunday at Augusta. You know, he bogeyed two holes coming in, shot 67. But he had an incredible round going with two eagles there, and his caddy said that's kind of where it changed. And obviously there are certain golf courses that just aren't made for him. Well, ironically, where his home is at Quail Hollow is really just not a golf course for him, and he's pretty much admitted that now. It's just too long. So he has to pick his spots.
I want to pay him one last compliment.
Okay.
What I thought was most impressive about his game Saturday and Sunday, and he was obviously firing on all cylinders, but his ability to hit the ball in the fairway on the correct side of the fairway over the course of those 2 days was incredible to me. I mean, that's where all of it at Sawgrass, if you're on the wrong side of the fairway or not in the fairway, that's when trouble jumps up and bites you. And it seemed effortless to me. And his choice of club was obviously excellent as well. He hit three wood in so many places. We know that the Sawgrass takes driver out of your hands, but he just was able to move that three wood and hit it exactly where he needed it to be on virtually every hole. I mean, he just stayed out of trouble off the tee all day long.
Yeah, it was a beautiful display of accuracy. It was the second guy to be in the 80 percentile category for driving accuracy, Tim Clark being the other, who gave him the putting tip that's helped save his career. Awesome performance. And I thought the other thing that was cool, even though he had that big lead, he talked quite a bit about how long the day was. And then how about both days he gets thrown at him? Now, again, it's not Tiger of 2000, but he's sitting around waiting to play Saturday. And here comes Tiger posting this great score. And he actually said that helped him because it made him realize, you know, I've got to continue to attack the course. And then Sunday, obviously, Tiger was on the golf course with the 2:05 tee time, about 35, 40 minutes before Webb. And Webb heard a few of the roars, although you don't hear a lot of huge roars through that golf course. It really reminds you how bizarre Augusta National is in an acoustical way. And he had that kind of coming at him, and then a bunch of other guys making moves where, if you do the arithmetic, there's some ways that you could lose a 7-stroke lead. Nobody's ever done it in the history of the PGA Tour, which I thought was an unbelievable stat. And so I think that was another cool element. And Tiger did he give people some thrills with what he was doing, and leave you feeling like he's really just getting better almost every week. And what I saw, House, was just a little more calmness. Body is just a little bit looser. Swing's just a little bit better. A little tighter, a little more athletic. Just little stuff here and there. And then just his way is just getting even more relaxed. He's pressing less. And those first two rounds, the mojo in that group was so bad. I mean, I went out there. I didn't go all the way with both of them. But Phil was not there.
He was playing like he was wearing a dress shirt.
He and Tim were they were talking about a summer house somewhere off the 13th tee. It's got a nice basement. You're welcome, by the way, Tim. Oh, that was I was laughing listening to that. So he you know, I don't know what's going on. He warned he'd have energy issues, and I feel like that's code for something. Maybe he just doesn't feel right. Maybe just something. So he was not fully engaged, I don't believe, after it started to go bad. I think he came out attempting to do his best, and it went south fast. And then Ricky just kind of had nothing going. So the group mojo stunk, and Tiger, I thought, held it together well, considering that. And then just Saturday morning, what's ironic is that front nine setup was brutal. It was the hardest they could do with the whole location Saturday. Sunday was the easiest that they could muster up. And he went out and shot 30 with those difficult hole locations. So really great week for him. And obviously what he did for the tournament was really cool, too. I've never seen that many people there.
A week ago, we said this tournament could be viewed as a referendum on, yeah, you know, his ability to kind of navigate around a place where driver has to be out of your hands. And the beloved Stinger was all over social media. I mean, I enjoyed watching on television, but, you know, you see all of the golf fans out there. Everybody loves the Stinger. Who doesn't love the Stinger, Shaq?
We had a moment. I got to tell you, there was a moment in the press conference where somebody asked about the origin of the Stinger. And now that he's giving us more stuff, and again, he gave us some great stories last week that nobody had ever heard. I mean, he admitted that Phil texted him and offered him help with his short game when he kind of had the yips going. I mean, like, that was a question I asked, and I was like, I went in and I went, where did that come from? That we've never heard that before. That was wild. But so somebody asked the Stinger question. He didn't, you know, in the past he would have just acted like, why are you bothering me with that? And I wanted to raise my hand and just ask Tiger, you know, a lot of people would like to know, why don't you just use the Stinger more often? Please, please. But I just couldn't quite do it. But then, you know, he did pull it out there, and then he had the one quacker into the lake on 18 on Thursday. But it was beautiful. It was beautiful to watch and see it again.
Yeah. So let's talk about, and I'm interested in what you observed in his post-round press conferences each of Saturday and Sunday, because the stretch that befuddled him was 13 to 18.
Yeah, and he played the front nine 11 under and the back nine even.
Yeah, and especially 13 to 18, he was 5 over on that stretch. Yeah. And on Saturday and Sunday, he failed to birdie 16, which is just incomprehensible to me. Now, the thing Johnny Miller was observing, and maybe you don't know whether or not there's a little bit of confirmation bias, because Johnny thought he thinks he's been observing something, and so he said it another 50 times. But he made this observation that to him it looks like Tiger's avoiding the water, and both of his tee shots on 13, you know, so both days, Saturday and Sunday, he birdies 12. Though, you know, there is buzz. I don't know if there's buzz on the grounds, but there is buzz on television. There is buzz on social media. I'm buzzing. You know, there's an excitement level. And each day, his tee ball into 13 failed to catch the slope. So he didn't get the slope. I mean, he was too far away to really have a serious run at birdie. So you say, okay, that's fine. Par, we'll accept par on 13. Now the guys were getting close and making birdie. But, you know, the most important thing is just hang in there and get through 14, because we know the danger that 14 represents. We've seen it over the years, how hard it can be. And it jumped up and bit him in two different ways both days. And really, that was the end of it. You know, that really killed the rally both days, to my way of thinking about it and to my way of watching it. Sunday was particularly painful because it looked like he just missed. He didn't miss that shot by very much, but he missed it by enough for it to spin all the way down to the bottom of the hill. And that was, you know, the end. He walked onto 13T 4 strokes behind Webb Simpson.
Right.
Webb was 18 under, Tiger was 14 under, and it was like, if he does anything here, it is going to get exciting.
Yeah.
And he just wasn't able to do it. So did he talk about 14 at all in either of those press conferences?
No, and I was kind of bouncing out of the Sunday one because I was more fascinated with his play on 14. Okay, first of all, the tee shot, I was behind the tee, And he got up and I go, oh no, look how far left he's aiming. And he just hit this beautiful, he didn't take much time, which I know some shot, his time over the ball varied. He hit this one, he got up, there was no hesitation. He's been trying to play it down the right side and he kept getting in trouble with the steep mounting. And he hit this beautiful low cut. And of course, when we got out there and you saw where it was just unbelievable. I've never seen somebody hit it in that little slot with that low cut, and he had that little wedge, and he put more spin on it than he thought. But what I was bothered by was actually the shot from down. He hit it down, and it spun down, and it was on Bermuda, and he immediately went for the putter. And the guy I was standing next to, I just said, I don't get it. Who wants to putt this off of Bermuda? Anyway, so after the round, I spoke to Joe LaCava's caddy, and I just quickly asked. I had one question. I said, was it the lie that caused him to grab the putter? And he goes, no, he just wanted to putt it. I went, okay, thanks. But that just killed him. That getting up and
that
down
killed him.
Spieth was down there too, and he hit this beautiful little kind of punch stab thing that bounced. Yeah, and it just grabbed. It was just beautiful.
Yeah,
and he'll
hit
about 100 of those this week, but at Trinity. And it was, and I was like, what? Why? It was odd. And I don't know. And that is a shot that he's had trouble with sometimes. But anyway, that was actually a momentum killer, because even though he'd hit the drive and had it spin back, he all he had to do was make par there.
Right.
He loves 15, that tee shot. He's been playing 16 well, in terms of the tee shot, but from there on in, it struggled. So it's one of those. But no, he was again great after the round. Answered every question, and he definitely seems very, very comfortable in his skin. What I liked, and this will be the final thing, and we'll move on to more important matter. Oh, okay. Well,
I have a question. You make your observation, but I have a question for you when you finish.
It just simply was, again, he's acknowledging the kids, tipping his cap to people. He's engaged with the fans, but I felt like this week he did what I'd hoped he'd do. He kept doing that, but it looked like he just, for whatever reason, he was also able to be just a little bit locked in more on the course. And my guess is a lot of that is being at a place that he knows so well and has played so many times. And he even made that comment after the round. It's very clear he's reconciled himself to be a horse for courses, and he's fine with it. And I think when he goes somewhere he doesn't know, he's just, I don't know if he's ever going to be as engaged. I mean, he really wants to qualify for Firestone. That's a big priority. He mentioned that after. It's the last time they're going to play there, and he wants to be there because he has won 8 times.
Yeah, it's a pretty good course for Tiger.
But I think it's cool that he just wants to be there for the last one, because he acknowledges that he's a part of its history, and it's a part of his life history, So it's little stuff like that where you just feel like the karma again is just on his side, it's very cool. And he admires he's watching what his peers are doing. He is admiring what other guys do. He admires Webb Simpson for what he did this week, stuff like that. It's natural. It's not like it doesn't feel forced.
Well, here's my question, and you just mentioned karma, so it's a nice kind of segue from the comfort of my couch.
Yeah.
Having watched the repeat performance on holes 13 to 18 Saturday and Sunday, I was left wondering whether or not there was some element of pressure that crept in, because he got close. He was much closer on Sunday than he was on Saturday. I mean, Saturday was a genuine moving day, old school Tiger getting himself back to the front page of the leaderboard to serve notice on everybody. And it was a great round that had the potential to be an extraordinary round. That was Saturday. Sunday, now I don't know whether what frame of mind he's in, whether he's scoreboard watching or not, but when you're standing on the tee on 13, and if he looked up or not, 4 strokes from the lead, you know, it's time to put the foot on the pedal a little bit.
Oh, he tried.
Okay.
No, he really wanted that shot. 13, he had a weird week with. I saw his shot on Thursday afternoon on 13 was so beautiful. He was so mad off the tee. Okay, so I first started walking with – kind of was with him, and then I kind of slowed and picked up the Phil and Tim chat on real estate. But Tiger let out an MF-er, you know, one of those, quietly towards the lake. Maybe right. Somebody heard it over at the Marriott Sawgrass. He was so mad. That shot was so good. Now, he waited about a minute. He took his sweet time waiting for the wind to die. So the golf gods said, okay, you want it to die? We're really going to let it die. And it just sat down completely. And he hit the – oh, it was so – it sounded so good. I mean, I had the coolest scene. You know, there's Ricky – and totally, you know, they're all locked in kind of at that shot because it gets your attention. But I don't know. That green's a little bit not quite the way it was, as Tiger knows it. So he may just not have the feel for how to funnel it into that pin.
Well, I don't feel
– the only moment I saw a sign of pressure was there was the stroke on 10, the birdie putt there. I mean, the minute he stroked, you're like, oh, that's a shove. But other than that, I know. I mean, 14 was just kind of a freakish set of things, and I didn't see choking. 15, he got right back in it, and he had a beautiful tee shot, and he had a nice second shot. It wasn't super close, and so –
But I don't
see nerves.
Two makeable birdies on 16. I didn't love the putting on 16.
Yeah.
And then it requires, you know, if you're really serious about winning or you know, finishing in the top three, you got to go to 17 and do something spectacular. And he misclubbed yesterday. I mean, is there any other way to describe what happened on 17T for him?
Nope. He did. And he really thought he had the right club. Jordan felt like he gave him a bad example, not intentionally, but he hit a draw wedge, he told us after, basically to deal with the wind, and because he was in between clubs and he had to really jump on it. So he put on this, like, what he called, just kind of a, he actually turned it actually started over the water and turned in, which is why he kind of reacted the way he did, like, oh my gosh, I just hit maybe one of the greatest shots of my life. I felt like it almost should have gone in the hole. So Tiger looked at his bag, he said, and Tiger said, ah, well, he hit the, I think it was a gap wedge. And I can hit that too. And it wasn't close. So
it wasn't close. I mean, that's exactly right.
Yeah,
now I thought Spieth was trying to make a hole in one there. It had that look.
Yeah. And we reacted like he wanted to.
Right.
It was such a cool scene. And that pin is so hard. I don't know how to express to people how difficult and scary that looks when you then, of course, put it in the context of the players. There are 6,000 people or whatever the number is around that hole. I've heard everywhere from 6 to 10. And it was packed. And the video boards and the late light and Tiger and Jordan. I mean, it was so cool. And but you just look at it and you go, that thing just sits in that little corner and it's not that big of an area. TV makes it look a lot bigger than it is. So I have full admiration for all those guys and the way they play that hole, that they play as well as they do. So we have got a lot to get to. We have important things this week. But of course, we have to do note that it was another great week for Odyssey House, the number one putter in golf, number one in worldwide wins, number one in worldwide tour usage this year. And of course, House, you know, it's a big week. If you like design, you like a cool looking putter, May 18th, the XO putters are in stores. The guys already had it on their tour bags. And if you sort of like industrial design, go take a look at these. They're really beautiful looking. And and by the way, Webb Simpson won with an Odyssey at the Players Championship.
Yeah, so, I wanted
good week.
To
OdysseyGolf.com. Go check it out.
That's right. I we do have this continuing trend of guys who have whatever equipment manufacturers in their bags, but everybody's got their old Odysseys. You know, Poulter played with an old Odyssey and won with it. We got that with Webb. Everybody loves the old school Odysseys. I had the opportunity to get a putting lesson last week from none other than Emiliano Grillo, and I had one of those beautiful XO sevens.
Oh.
And I tried to steal the one that they were letting me play and take it home mm-hmm. with me on the airplane, but I was not permitted to do that.
No.
But I will be on May the 18th rushing out and getting one of those guys into the bag.
Now, I have something else. My Dodgers are horrible,
yeah.
So I know I'm going to be able to get some cheap seats to a game when I get home. They're awful.
Fortunately for you, buying tickets can be complicated and confusing unless you're buying Dodgers tickets. Then it's very straightforward. but of course, the simple way to buy is with SeatGeek because it's the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're catching your favorite musician on tour, that's Post Malone, right? You joined Justin Thomas and Bud.
I missed that one.
Post Malone, right?
I went to Taco Lou where they went before the concert, but no, I didn't know who Post Malone was. I'm feeling really old.
Well, I had the SeatGeek app on my phone. Obviously, it's the easiest way to shop for tickets. One thing that I've done, and I hope that you've taken advantage of this as well. I'll sit in the Uber on the way down because if I'm going to a baseball game and I know I'm going to have a couple pops there.
Take the Uber.
And then right. I'm on the SeatGeek app and I was like, where do I want to sit? I can do it in the 20-minute ride on my way to the Nats game because I'm going to have a couple pops and I'm going to enjoy myself. And let me just go ahead and buy the tickets from SeatGeek. It's designed to make the ticket buying experience easier than ever. It saves time and money because it's searching multiple ticket sites. I can't do that from my phone. You know how dumb I am with my fat thumbs. Give you the most bang for your buck based on every ticket graded according to the best seats that fit your budget, all the purchases fully guaranteed. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals in every type of ticket. Best of all, Shaq, our listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and a promo code HOUSE. Today, that's promo code HOUSE for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, right seat, right now, right from your phone.
All right, House, I was traveling to Dallas today from Jacksonville, so please give me your nutshell reaction to the Supreme Court decision and then what you think it will mean for golf.
So,
this is a golf podcast.
The legal community and by extension the media have all been anticipating this outcome. So I've been cautiously optimistic. In many respects, as cautiously optimistic as I am about my own Washington Capitals, but that's for a different show, a different podcast, a different level of excitement. I can't believe I'm allowing myself to believe in my Capitals. But in that guarded optimism, that cautious optimism, it seemed like the court was leaning in this direction. And God bless them, I was much more elated, much more excited about the result than I anticipated because I kind of thought that this is the way the court was going to go. But when it really happened, it was like, holy cow, it's a brand new world. It's a brand new universe. Everything is possible. Anything is possible. Let's see what's going to happen. Now, I have no idea what it's going to mean for betting. Anywhere, because all that's happened is the court struck down a federal law on the basis that the federal law overreached states' rights. So the states, the basic constitutional principle here is that the Congress does not have the right to infringe on the state's regulation of the state citizens. That's not a simple, that's not a complicated idea. What does it mean in terms of the 15 states that have legislation in the hopper that are ready to go ahead and issue regulation and legalize betting in their states? I have absolutely no idea, but I'm very excited to see the permutations here. The most important thing to me is ease of access, ease of use, and I'm hoping that there is some thoughtful approach to how in a particular state you can leverage the internet into your enjoyment of a live event. Because that's the most, physically having to go to a place and put something down is a good first step, but the real opportunity here in terms of enjoying a live event, and especially golf, because I knew you knew I would get around to it, is the ability to, for the beauty of golf, and part of why I think it's such an attractive sport to go ahead and wager on, is it takes place over the course of a day. Right? Like what's happening in the morning may impact what happens in the afternoon or early evening, or it may not, but you can get in and get out and participate in any variety of ways with golf. You can try and forecast the winner. You can try and forecast a top 10 finish. You can try and forecast a particular, will there be a hole in one, you know, over these next 10 groups? You can try and this is where the real opportunity resides in terms of the internet opportunity. Predictive forecasting on shot-to-shot basis, and that's really what I'm anticipating as being just tremendous fun.
Me too. That I'm getting annoyed with futures and all that kind of stuff. That just isn't appealing, and it's obnoxious what the odds are when we know how golf works. But that the idea that you could sit there with an app and kind of play make or miss or all sorts of things. I mean, if somebody's really creative, they could have so much fun, and you could do it for little increments, and it just would be something that would be it will be huge for golf. And I think that's why you see the PGA Tour having a very advanced understanding of where this could go. And I retweeted an interview Jason Sobel did with a couple of people, including Andy Levinson of the Tour, is a really smart guy. He's been put together their drug testing policy. He's just very talented. He's got a lot of different jobs and wears hats at the Tour that are cover of quite a range. And this has clearly been a big project for him. And they are definitely seeing that golf has the potential to be probably one of the sports that benefits the most. Now, would I be a Debbie Downer if I do I? Can I bring up what my big concern is? I think touched. Well, you know, I think I've mentioned it before, but in the context of the fan behavior stuff we've had, I'm just very concerned that we could get to where somebody could influence the competition by making noise, by being a distraction. We're the one sport, other than maybe tennis, but even tennis, you get a point replayed and things like that with a line judge. There's so many different ways that I could see that being remedied or dealt with. But in golf, it's really hard to take back a shot and to say, well, that guy yelled because he's got a wager on you making par on this hole. And we don't know the backstory of all that. So that's where I get a little bit nervous and have been nervous with the fan behavior stuff. Because one, I don't see the competition interfered with at all, but especially if this happens with the opportunity for somebody to profit off of somebody's
misfortune. Yeah.
Finding of a ball in the water because somebody yelled on their backswing.
So two observations in that vein. In the first place, there's been successful wagering on golf in the UK for some number of years now, and yeah, thus far,
you're tempting me to say something
been no obvious incidents, no obvious moments where a fan has sought to interrupt play or sought to change the outcome. Now, I don't know whether or not a person who's betting in the UK on golf has the ability to bet on shot-by-shot outcomes. I'm just not that familiar with what they do there.
I have not seen anything like that, no. In the past had betting on site at tournaments, but nothing the predictive kind of stuff you're talking about. They have it in horse racing, and they have it in other things, but I have not. They may have it in golf. Betfair and those may. I have not encountered it.
So I wouldn't have any problem with some kind of restriction on the course as the tour rolls this out, as it becomes a reality sometime over the next, let's say, 24 to 36 months, where the predictive shot-by-shot opportunity to wager may not be available to those physically in attendance. And I understand that cuts both ways. On the one hand, you don't want to drive folks away from your event by limiting their access. But on the other hand, people that are there on Saturday and Sunday when it's nut crunching time, I believe is a colloquialism, they're there to see the competitive golf anyway, right? Those aren't folks going out with the intention of, you know, they don't need an enhancement to their experience. So being deprived of gambling on those elements. The other element to this, obviously, is you know, you were shying away from it. This basic civility, you know, this is the this is the sort of juncture that we're at, where the return of Tiger, the return of eyes, return of interest to professional golf is producing bigger spectator fields. And the tour, to its credit, you know, we keep seeing, you know, a little bit of news here, a little bit of observation there, that they it's something they're sensitive to. Now, I did hear quite a bit.
No, I don't agree. They're not sensitive enough that I've seen. And that was one of the issues we had with the early in the year that we're there. And I think where some of the players had issues, I feel like it's been buttoned up a little bit in recent weeks, and I do wonder what's gone on to change that. But and maybe this is part of it. Maybe the gambling element is part of it, or maybe it was just the players saying, "Hey, I don't need to be badgered." And by the way, House, at the players, the crowd was great, but man, a few times I walked through either right behind a star group or right in front. And there are some amazingly obnoxious little comments that are made, and you don't know if the players hear them, but they're just little jabs that are just not what you are used to, or I am not used to at a golf tournament, and that could wear on a player. If somebody did that for, you know, was out at the walkway to the next tee on four or five holes in a row, and kind of gently heckling, you know, and a player keeps hearing it, okay, you just don't know what effect that has. So anyway, it's out there still.
Well, I feel like that element of things remains a work in progress. I mean, I think, you know, nobody could have predicted in December of 2017 that Tiger was going to come back in this manner. And let's just be honest about it. These crowds are attributable to the Tiger effect, right? Like golf is relevant again.
Yes. But also some of the young guy. I mean, we discussed this with Justin Thomas's issues and Jordan Rory. And I do think that there is something there, but where the younger guys, that people get to know them through social media more, somehow it makes them comfortable to needle them like their buddies, or to yell out something at them. And I love that if it's, you know, if they're coming off the tee and it's encouragement or it's just excitement. But I can't fathom. I'm struggling with these weird little passive-aggressive, and some of them are just nasty comments. And sometimes the guys hear them, sometimes they don't. But I feel like it's not just a Tiger thing. I do think it's the younger group being more accessible and on the social media has changes people's relationship with them or what they feel they're entitled to say. And you know, I've gotten responses on Twitter all the time about this. I pay money to a golf tournament. I have the right to say what I want to these guys. And I don't know where that comes from.
Yeah. Well, I think you're definitely right about the accessibility concept, and that it sort of breeds an inappropriate familiarity. But I'm willing to sort of let this sort of play out a little bit and
let the tour
you know, kind of figure it out. And obviously alcohol sales have a role in it. And you know, ultimately, my hope is that there is self-policing among the fans, you know, to identify knuckleheads and, you know, let that be the way that we all get to enjoy the events in a way that doesn't interfere with the outcome.
And that may have happened the last few weeks. So, all in all, though, it's going to be exciting and different. And speaking of that, I have some intel.
That's what I'm after.
On a golf course and a tournament here that very few people have played the golf course, and a tournament that very few stars are coming to, by the way. But I think they're going to regret it if they like creative golf and ground golf. So, it's AT&T Byron Nelson Week. Billy Horschel's your defending champion, but of course he won at the TPC Las Colinas.
Yeah, that's why I couldn't remember. Sorry, Billy Horschel.
It's okay. That's all right. He blocked me on Twitter. So the golf course is called Trinity Forest. It's a Coren Crenshaw design. It was founded in 2014. They had a rough grow-in. They had some washouts and things. And so it's taken a while to get to this point, and it's the 50th anniversary of the tournament. And the club was founded by basically one gentleman, but there's some AT&T people involved. So there's a little bit of synergy there. And then Cameron McCormick, Jordan Spieth's instructor, is part of the academy here. The SMU golf team has a ridiculous clubhouse and facility to practice from. There's a first tee facility, a par three course, which I didn't know was called the horse course. There's a great horse course in Valentine, Nebraska that was designed many years ago, but it's nice to see somebody else taking the concept. And then there is an 18-hole golf course. That house is going to be utterly fascinating to watch on television. There are some wild and wacky greens out here, and it is a real ground game course. It's an old landfill. Coren Crenshaw, though, have made it into a links-looking place. It's got its own zoysia grass developed to be firm and fast. The one caveat is that it's still raw, so you're still going to see some native areas that are not perfect. You're going to see a couple little areas where the grass isn't perfect, and it's going to look, it looks pretty green. I'm looking out the window right now. The club actually mows the place a little bit tighter than the tour has it. And they, I think, would like to see it firmer and faster. But I went out through Ball's house, and this place is nuts. I mean, you can't believe some of these contours and features and shots the guys are going to have to hit. So I highly recommend. This is definitely not the Byron Nelson of old. And, it's not the most thrilling field. Jordan Spieth's obviously the ambassador. They're really the resident guy as an AT&T person in Dallas, resident and person who practices out here a lot. So he has a massive advantage. He's played this course. I don't know how many times. We'll ask him tomorrow, but it's a lot. He even played it before it was officially open. Bo Hostler's played out here about five or six times, I was told. Jeff Ogilvie has been doing some work over at Shady Oaks. So Jeff has kind of been become sort of a friend of the tournament, it appears. He's going to do a press conference, and he's really, as somebody who loves this minimalist architecture, going to be asked to defend it. And then Hunter Mahan, another Dallas resident, has played here a lot, and he also will be coming in to talk to us. So those guys, and then there's just a handful of others have actually played it. And I had a caddy tell me today, he goes, I don't know how anybody's going to learn this place in 2 days. It's insane. So big home course advantage for Jordan, for sure.
Okay. All right. You just mentioned the ground game thing. He gave a quote at the players. Yes. About it being, he called it American links, which is to suggest that it's better fair. To perhaps attack it from the air. You may not be able to, attack it from the ground once you get proximate to the greens because of those undulations that you just mentioned. And he compared it to Birkdale. Now, that's just his experience at Birkdale. Did you get any sense of whether or not that's going to bear out, or a guy's going to be able to attack it on the ground or not?
Yes. I was throwing balls all over the place, and you actually are going certain hole locations, certain holes, you're going to have to land it short of the green, left of the green. There are very few hole locations that I've seen in the holes that I've watched and walked and threw balls around on where you actually, if you just play a ball straight at the pin, it will take two bounces and stop. You're going to see so many crazy shots. If you watch my Instagram story today, I video recorded a couple guys on 17. You're going to have to play to a spot and feed the ball down. And that takes some time to learn that, and look at guys at Augusta. It takes them many years to trust that. So that's going to be the trick this week. But that is, to me, my favorite thing to watch in golf, when somebody does know what they're doing, controls the ball to a spot and feeds it down, and the crowd, makes the noise, and it's just you're going to get a lot of that here. So,
all right, well, really, I can't let this opportunity, now that that betting is legal.
Not quite.
I'm not betting on Jordan Spieth at 5.5 to 1, But if I'm in my sweet spot of that 25-1 to 35-1, mm-hmm. here are three names, and Hostler is one of them. I also had seen the research that he'd played there before, and I like very much the form that he's in. I thought he did a really impressive job at the Players last week. So Bo Hostler, 35-1, that's one of them. What do you think about Mark Leishman?
Definitely a place the Aussies will like. It has that feeling in a lot of ways. And I think that's probably actually what Jordan, that would be a great analogy for him. I mean, American Lynx is great because we're in America, but it does have a very Australian vibe as well. So okay. a fine, fine selection.
Last name, Brandon Grace. And the main reason he's jumping out at me is I still have in my head what he did at Chambers Bay. And just having done, you know, very little in the way of comparing Chambers Bay to this, but just observationally, it feels like this, there might be some similarities.
Funny you say that. When I was throwing balls around the 17th green, four caddies came up. One of them was Michael Greller, and he made the Chambers Bay comment to one of the guys. He goes, it's got a lot of Chambers Bay.
Well,
to it. I would say that what I wanted to interject as the architecture geek was, yes, but these are better grades. These are better design. Okay. But I didn't.
All
so,
right.
Yes, it does have that feel. Those are fine. I love those selections.
Okay, good. Those are my three names. Brandon Grace, 25-1. Leishman, 28-1. Hostler, 35-1.
Okay. Two interesting sponsor exemptions just this week. Maverick McNeely is in the field, as is Joaquin Niemann, the great amateur golfer who qualified for the Masters. And he played very nicely in his pro debut. I always like on this kind of a golf course to side with people who are more worldly and who've played golf on these kinds of golf courses. I don't know where that leaves us with Sergio. He's not been great this year. And I feel like at some point here it's going to kick in. And this is a place I think he could either just love or hate. But, man, he's played a lot of links golf. And he is somebody who has no problem working the ball in the wind and landing it around and moving it and playing it on the ground. And the interesting thing around the greens house is that they're probably going to be putting a lot when they miss greens. So it's going to be somebody who can have kind of that touch around the green and hit an 8-iron now and then. So that's something else to keep in mind, but it's going to be, you know, it's a big moment, House, for the minimalist design movement, because we're going from Las Colinas with lakes and a Four Seasons, and don't underestimate how much the guys are going to miss their Four Seasons right on top of the golf course. This is not quite the
I don't blame them.
Fanciest neighborhood, but the thing that I think is important here to understand is this is really the first time a Coore and Crenshaw course has been built to host the tour. Kapalua wasn't really built that way, and it's a bold, crazy place that is not certainly Kapalua with the views, and so this is kind of a high-risk moment for the people who love this movement, and I think everybody's a little bit nervous about how the players are going to react. I think they've been reminded many, many times that AT&T is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful friend of the PGA Tour, and we would like them to continue to be, so watch your comments. So there will be somebody, though, who calls it a, you know, they wasted a good landfill. There will be a few of those, but I hope the players give it a shot. I hope they understand it's still maturing, although I was amazed how well the ball's moving around out there. So it's going to be a week, though, where you know we saw the effect of Chambers Bay and Aaron Hills on the movement to get new courses in the U.S. Open Rota. I think those two have really hurt that movement, but they really weren't by the minimalist architects. Jay Blasi, who worked on Chambers Bay, is a little bit in that movement. So this is a big moment for the people who love the Coore Crenshaw, Tom Doak, Gil Hance world that is really taking golf architecture kind of by storm right now. So a lot of excitement, but a little bit of tension, too, to see how this works.
Well, I'm just excited to see a brand new venue on television. I just want to see how it plays out. And you don't get a lot of that American Lynx notion in on tour. So I'm hoping for kind of a gentle weather week so that there isn't
a little warm.
Well, that's fine. But I mean, yeah. I don't want 25 mile an hour. I don't want the Texas winds to be up.
It blows every day here. It blows every day. But it's designed for the wind. It's
and
wide.
If it blows in the same direction, that's fine. I just don't want, you know, maelstrom winds. I want the course to have it, the opportunity to be played the way that these guys imagine. So I'm psyched for it.
Yeah, the 100-degree high forecast, I think, on Friday is not great. But the superintendent I spoke to is a great superintendent here, Casey Koff. He's kind of excited for the heat. I said, are you sure the turf can hold on? Oh, yeah, yeah. He wants it to bake. He wants it to get crazy firm and fast. And that's always fun. But he's following the tour orders, and he's done. And I admire what the rule staff is doing. They're making sure they get this right. It's one that if they err on the side of conservative this year, no big deal. They're going to be coming back here for a lot of years. So,
That's it.
And then, of course, I don't know where this is going to fall on the schedule, but the one interesting thing for this tournament going forward will be that I think it's going to be the event the week before the PGA Championship in the future. So we'll see if this style of design ends up being a problem for attracting players who then are getting ready to play in a PGA, which, you know, next year it'll be. You realize, House, next year at this time will be the PGA Championship at Bethpage Black. Think about that. I can't wait. I don't know how the turf is up there. I know the trees have finally started to pop on the with some leaves, but it's amazing to think the PGA Championship will be this date in 2019. So
yeah, I can't wait.
It's going to be. It's going to be fun. Anything else you want to get off your chest before we say goodbye?
I think we got it all.
All right. Well, I do want to remind people that our friends at Callaway Golf, of course, have redesigned CallawayGolf.com. So go check out the new look and have fun designing clubs. It's a lot easier than before. And, of course, it'll also take you to Callaway Live, where you can hear from Xander Schauffele, who finished second at the Players' Championship last week. Get to know him. I think he's found something, and he's gotten over the big thrill of the Tour Championship play, and he's ready to get on a run here. So check that out at CallawayGolf.com.
Well, this week we had Brett Martin from GQ on House of Cards.
Oh,
we talked about some best new restaurants in America, and brand new podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network coming from Micah Peters, staff writer at the Ringer, co-host of the Ringer FC Soccer Podcast. Brand new music podcast called On Shuffle, and it seems like there will be a rotating cast of Ringer staffers, music experts, and artists on, and we believe that Micah is probably going to die on the Lil Wayne is Deserving of the Utmost Respect Island. So check out that podcast.
I don't know what that means, but I'm sure it'll be sensational.
Yes.
House, one last thing I got to tell you before you say goodbye. Rick Riley asked me, how's Billy Simmons doing? He was in the media center at the Players. He brought a little energy. It was fun to have him back. I wrote an item on, the forecaddy wrote an item for Golf Week. Go check it out. It's kind of funny, I think. Anyway, it was interesting having him around at the tournament. So he's going to be at the majors this year. And, you know, I'm feeling like somehow I think I'm gonna bring he and Bill together and somehow. I don't know. He had me laugh.
That.
Yeah, good luck with that. Yeah, he was
good
great, though.
Yeah.
It was fun having him around, and he loves golf, and he's only covering golf. So of you – yeah, exactly. House, anything else? You got to say goodbye? Anything you want to –
Oh, we've got it all covered, Shaq. All that we're going to do, I think we're back where we have a little bit of a time off, but we're back in time for the U.S. Open preview here on the Shaq House, part of the Ringer Podcast Network.